Welcome to the Stewards of Stoke podcast, an adventure podcast that gets you stoked for the outdoors through stories, interviews with athletes, and industry professionals. Sit back, grab a hazy, and join Matt and Braven for this episode of Stewards of Stoke.
What is up, guys? Welcome to the Stewards of Stoke podcast. My name is Matt. I am one of your hosts, and today I am solo because Braven had to be a grown-up and work. So I'm going to try not to be awkward, but here we go. Today we have the honor of chatting with Braden Bringhurst. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Totally.
Yeah. Crushed it. Yes. Doing great. He is, I'll just go into the intro that I wrote. All right. We, as in, and then I put in parentheses, I am, because Braven couldn't make it. I'm joined by a rider whose blend of grit, creativity, and sheer determination has redefined what's possible on a mountain bike. You might know him from the mind-blowing ascent of the whole enchilada showcased in the film 8600 Feet, or his innovative projects creating the Hard Mountain Bike League. Beyond the viral clips and epic rides, Braden's a father, filmmaker, storyteller, and community builder who's constantly pushing the sport himself to new heights. Without further ado, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Wow, thanks so much, boss. I'm stoked to be here. I appreciate those nice words.
Yeah, absolutely. I may or may not have had some help from ChatGPT.
Awesome.
Well, cool. As I said, like, I'm super pumped to have you on here. You're one of the, I feel like the few very interactive pro guys out there, and definitely like make us little guys and fans feel connected and whatnot. So it's definitely an honor for you to be here and to get you on here. So.
Oh, thanks, man. I honestly feel super grateful to just be part of the mountain bike community. I mean, mountain biking is obviously like a deep passion and love for me personally, but I just feel super, super thankful to be part of the bigger community.
Yeah,
of mountain
for sure.
Because doesn't matter if you're just barely starting out or you're a seasoned pro, like, we all pretty much ride for the same reason. Mm-hmm. Just to get out and, you know, feel that freedom. And I'm inspired by people like you. I mean, somebody that's, you know, putting a full career into giving back to the community, you know, as being a police officer, like, other first responders, medical workers, school teachers, like all of the people right around me, coaches, like, I am truly so inspired by them. And I've found a way to blend my love of riding and love of that sport to trying to approach it more like somebody like you with like a lifetime of service to the community. You know, like I love riding, but I do love to be involved in my community. And so the total honor to be here, man, 100%.
Like, yeah. And too, like you said, like kind of, I feel like you're, like you said, you're using it to give back to your community. Like, you saw obviously that Boise needed a mountain bike festival. So you jumped on that and made it happen. Like, if you haven't watched the whole enchilada, like, it's not just about riding, like, it's kind of more like mental health awareness and just like having that mental strength to push forward and all that. And so I think you do an absolutely amazing job of like incorporating that into like your filmmaking side, but using obviously your mountain biking platform and all that to kind of show that.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. Well, that's so good you noticed that, because that's definitely the motivation behind it all.
For sure. Yeah, and we'll talk about mindset and mental strength and all that kind of here in a little bit. But kind of tell us about the early days, the BMX days, when you met your wife, all your kids, all that.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I always, from when I was a little kid, I think I learned how to ride my little, Magna, you know, BMX Walmart bike when I was probably 4 years old or something. And
That was a mongoose for me.
You're a mongoose. Yeah. I was Magna. I think it was called a mud puppy or something, Yeah, I just remember as a little kid, I just loved my bike. And I remember like waking up in the mornings and just wanting to ride that bike. And that was always a place for me in life where I felt maybe like free. I also felt really safe in it. Like even though bike riding is and can be a little bit crazy, like it was a space that I always felt like comfortable in. And so just through my years growing up, you know, doing all the traditional sports like baseball and basketball and soccer and football and wrestling and track and field, like I always knew that at my core, I loved bike riding.
Oh yeah.
So bike riding was always that thing. And when I was about 8 or 9, my parents down in Arizona took me to my first BMX race. I had a buddy named Zane and he raced and he's like, yeah, you should come out. So I went out and I did my first bike race at like, I think I was 8, and I got third place in novice and I was just so pissed. I was like, hitting my tire against the wall. And my parents were like, look, buddy, you knock it off.
Yeah.
If you hit that tire against that fence one more time, we're selling your bike and you're done. And I was like, oh, okay. So I straightened out. I learned pretty quickly, like I got to learn to control, you know, like myself. And I remember waking up early before school and going riding with my friend and like, you know, then seeing the clock and we got to go put the bikes in the
got to ride even harder to make it on time.
Yeah, we got to ride even harder. We're riding around, finding jumps, and then we got to go lock our bikes up and get to class.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remembered that, and I loved it. I loved biking. And then I got more into BMX racing and continued to do that, and I just, like, really loved biking. Like, it was just a place for me, and I learned a lot of self-belief. I raced all over the country and stuff like that. And then I really, along, you know, my adolescent life, I think adolescent, that's the right word, right? Adolescent.
Yeah. It's kind of a big word for me, but it sounds right.
Yeah. So like through those teenage years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, you're good.
Okay.
I'm going to look it up.
I like really struggled in school. I just struggled with focus. I struggled with the traditional like school system and so I always felt really stupid. Like I just did not believe in myself that I could like do academics but I always found confidence and self-belief in my bike riding and, you know, and then it kind of turned into other sports like snow skiing and track and field. And, but it all stemmed from my self-belief that I developed through biking.
Mm-hmm.
There came a time when high school was finishing up and I was like, you know what? I could either go pro on my BMX bike, or I could go out and serve a mission for my church and I could start this different path of mm-hmm. self-growth and self-development, like getting an education and, you know, going out and getting outside myself. And so I kind of did that. Like I put the bike on the shelf and I was like, all right, I'm ready to just try and become a better version of myself. And so I did that. And then, that was a 2-year service mission and it was great. I learned that I was more happy, like helping people and, you know, kind of like just listening, to how people are doing, not necessarily trying to fix problems, just being there for people, trying to help however I could. And then I came home and I was trying to figure out my schooling. And you know, for the longest time, it was like I kind of thought I had accomplished everything I wanted physically or athletically. Like I was purely satisfied because in high school, I was like U.S. Junior national free ski champion. I was multi-time national champion on the BMX bike. I was state champion in the pole vault. Like, as far as I was concerned, I had I could do an athletic feat and like reach that goal.
Do you feel like, is that kind of like why you decided to do like the 2-year mission with your church, is because you were kind of at that point where you felt?
Yeah, like I had accomplished. I was so satisfied in my sport, in my physical. You know, you got the four intelligences: mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And I was so competent in the physical. Right. Like I knew that if I set my goal on something, I could work my absolute butt off and I could reach that goal. And so, yeah, I was like, I gotta improve spiritually. I gotta improve mentally. I gotta improve in these other ways. And so that was the reason for hanging up the bike, stepping into these new spaces. And then really when I got back from the mission, I was like, all right, I gotta figure out what I'm doing for school. It felt like in my back pocket, I had my athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
I had this ability to maybe get into a good school because I'm a good athlete. And I didn't know how it was all going to work out. And, you know, I believe it was, you know, I was blessed. And I was able to increase. I was coaching at my old high school. I was coaching my friend that was a was a freshman when I was there, but now was going to be a senior. And our original coach left to another school. And so I was just helping him be like, hey man, let me help you your senior year.
What like sport is this?
It was pole vaulting. And track and field. And so I was just like, hey, yeah, I'll help you. You have a bright future. You're going to beat my school record, no doubt. Like, you're going to crush it. Let's have some fun. And so I did that. And as I was coaching him, I was doing some training too. Like after practice, I would grab a pole and vault, and I increased my pole vault 2 feet. So I went from like 15 feet,
which is like
pretty okay, but not like really like D1 level.
Okay.
To 17 feet. And 17 feet is going to attract a lot of D1 schools.
So you went from like community college to like D1.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like all of a sudden I had this in, you know, to get a good degree. And I was like, oh, maybe this is my catalyst to getting and developing mentally, like to get into a good school. And so I just continued to like pursue it. And I had sucky freaking test scores and crappy GPA. And so I was like, all right, what do I need to do to become eligible for the NCAA? And you had to get like a certain number on your ACT. And so what I did was I started the ACT prep classes. I was going back to high school classes. I was 21 years old, going back to high school prep ACT classes. It was honestly super kind of embarrassing, but I was like, I don't care. This is what I got to do. I'm fine. So I was doing these ACT prep classes. And then I was studying up in my room every day doing practice tests. And I had to take the ACT 4 more times. Oof. And like my 15 to 17 foot pole vault was a blessing. Like I was also super blessed to be able to get the exact score I needed to be eligible through the NCAA. And soon as I did that, then the colleges were like, all right, like we can work with that. Like if you're eligible, we can get you in the back door, but you're going to have to work with our tutors. You're going to have to work with you know, you're going to have to take our classes that are going to teach you how to study and how to organize. And I'm like, please, yeah. I need all the help I can get. So, I started just getting into school and like learning how to study, learning how to do study groups, learning how to go to labs, learning how to do study guides, learning how to get through textbooks, just kind of figuring it out. And, it was a really, big deal for me personally. Mm-hmm. And it was right around that time that I met, Dr. Manning, who's my sports psychologist. He's my mental performance coach. And that was back in 2011. Okay. So 14 years ago. And, the moment I heard him chat from the start, I just took his book and I read it like religiously every day. And I applied the journaling aspect. And ever since then, I can confidently say that mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, I've been able to go after goals in all of those categories and reach them.
Oh yeah.
And it was just like, holy crap. I figured something out.
Right.
You know, I went on to get my MBA. I was continually developing certain ways. We started the Boise Mountain Bike Festival. I was getting involved here. I was doing this. And I was like, then COVID hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a freaking gnarly time. Like,
oh, yeah. It was wild.
People were like taking their lives, lots of depression. And I was like, what the heck can I do? What mm-hmm. can I do? And I knew that I had learned something, and it was these mental skills that like really helped me. And I wanted to share that with the world. And so I was like, what's something nutso that I could do that would, that would show the process, but then I could teach and share the mental side of the whole thing, and hopefully, or with the hope that it would help people.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we sit here today and like, dude, I'm so freaking stoked and I'm so humbled that people are being inspired by mm-hmm. that film, and I'm getting more opportunities to share and talk with people. And really my goal is just, I just want to be a force for good and just help as many people as I possibly can.
Oh yeah. I think like just going back to like so many, like you open up about your story from kind of like you said, your BMX days, like I feel like a lot of people like didn't, like I hated school. I absolutely mm-hmm. hated being yeah. just stuck in a classroom all day. Like it did nothing for me. And I remember my freshman year, I failed algebra.
Yeah.
I had to take it. I had to take it again my sophomore year, and like, so I grew up in New York. And then like the passing grade was like a 64.25 or something. And my sophomore year, I passed it with like a 64.75.
Yes.
And I think it was just because like my teacher was like, I don't want to see you next year, which I mean, I'm good with, but
dude, I think I had so many of those too. I think they were like, okay, let's just pass this little twerp.
Yeah. And like, they're like, if we don't pass him, then he's going to get held back a year, and like, we don't want to deal with him. And hey, if that's what it was, like, sure.
That's hilarious.
But it was like, I was all about riding bikes and like snowboarding and all that. And that's like all I wanted to do is just, I never had an interest in school other than pretty much like shop class.
Yeah.
And that was because we got to build some cool shit. And I built usually ramps as like some of my projects and stuff. And I'd go huck it in my front yard. And
oh, that's so sick.
And then it was like same thing. Like college wasn't even like thought of for me. I signed a contract for the Army when I was 17.
Legendary.
Like no. I just knew I had to pass basically to get to go do that. So, I think like on that level as well, like people connect with you too. And I think that's cool that you open up about that and share like the struggle that so many people have, but
nothing to hide, man. Like,
for sure.
That's one of the reasons I try to show a lot of my failures, you know, because I feel like in this world, it is just so easy to always share the highlights, mm-hmm. like to show like all of the wins. And it's just a natural thing. I mean,
right.
We always want to show like, hey, look, we did something cool here. We did something cool there. And that is great. But it's also like, it's also can be, you know, kind of toxic to mm-hmm. that one individual. That's like, well, nothing's good in my life. You know, nothing seems to be well. In reality, like, we all have wins, we all have losses, and it's important, I think, to show, mm-hmm. especially on the internet, that not everything is sunshine and rainbows. I mean, anybody that knows me personally, like my family or my friends, they know that I struggle and I'm like a total normal everyday person. But on the internet, it's just so much easier mm-hmm. and almost more natural to show your wins
for
than
sure.
your struggles. And so like in the film, in my Instagram, in my stories, I've kind of always tried to show a sense of realness of mm-hmm. what it takes to do something great. Because I think that right there is like motivating versus like, oh yeah, Braden can just do it because he's Braden. It's like, no, like I spent hours or mm-hmm. days or years trying to figure that out, you know? And I think if people just understand that, man, we're all so freaking capable of For doing sure. of anything we want, we can do it.
Yeah. And I think like, kind of like what you said, like with social media nowadays and stuff, like people only showing their wins. It's like that's what sponsors, I feel like, want to see. Like you see these dudes who are doing like the downhill UCI stuff. Like it's just constantly like podiumed, like just posts like that. And I'm not like, obviously, ragging on anybody or trying to piss anybody off, but it's like that's kind of what I guess everybody's perception is of like pros, right? And yeah. like you said, like you do an amazing job of showing like your outside of mountain biking life and just kind of keeping it real with everybody. And I think that's why like so many people connect. And
that's cool.
For sure. And then like you said, like you could have, we can kind of start jumping into the whole enchilada. But like on some of those features, like the three main features, like you attempted those like hundreds of times. There's like the what is it, the notch?
Oh my gosh, the snotch.
The snotch, thank you. Like just in like the one trip that your wife, I think, was filming you on, like it was like 53 times, I think I count, was like the last number that you gave, and you put like each take like down in the corner.
Yeah, it was brutal.
So it's just like showing like the mindset aspect of that. Like I totally connected with it, just more than just it. You riding your bike.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to show like, all right, even though it might look like I'm just banging my head against the wall, it's like every single failure that I make, I'm trying to pull out, okay, what did I learn from that? You know, what did I get out of that that's going to help me make this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's kind of insane that I think still kind of surprises me today is that snotch took between 700 and 800 total attempts. Like, and it was weeks or months in between where I was coming back. I was building more power because at the end of that last session, I just needed more power or I needed to do bike adjustments or I needed to really visualize and focus where to put my power or where to put my pedals. And all of that information just took time and practice and a lot of failures to figure out the puzzle. And like, to me, I was like, man, that was on the edge of what I think I could do. But it was kind of crazy, like how it showed on camera that like that thing took a lot of mm-hmm. attempts. And people have asked me, even little kids, like, how do you not get discouraged, like, after trying so many times? And, you know, the answer really is just every failure, I was still pulling out the good. I was still focused on, okay, what did I learn from this? And what could I use from it to come back ready to try it again? I wasn't ever getting through one of those failures and being like, oh, I suck, this isn't possible. No, it was like, I would fail and I'd be like, okay, I need to do this. I need to get my foot there. I need to keep the power down there. It was always a failing to like progress, mm-hmm. you know? And that was a message that I thought was pretty important to share.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I absolutely hate climbing in general, let alone, like you said, trying something hundreds of times.
It's a lot more fun.
But like your detail too, like you literally go through like each inch of like those sections, mm-hmm. like making sure like your pedal placement and like all that. Like it also shows like how, I guess, particular and like exact of a writer and detailed you are too, to be able to figure that out. Cause like you said, most people after not even 10 tries are just like, fuck this, I'm going to walk it.
Oh, exactly.
And then, yeah. So one of my like things that kind of came up too, like while I'm watching this is like, what's like the proximity of that trail to like Boise?
It was about 8.5 hours.
Okay. And then how many times did you have to go down there?
I went down there, I think specifically for the snatch, where I was just driving straight to the snatch and practicing and then going and sleeping at Kyle's house and going back to the snatch. I think it was like 5 or 6 times.
Okay. And then what total for the whole trail?
No, I mean the whole trail. I had to go to bits of it,
right?
Probably twice and just kind of piece stuff together.
Gotcha.
And so I could do that, take notes, and then I really had to just go home and just do all of the training to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
To piece that thing together, because
there
was a lot of aspects to it. There was the endurance aspect, there was the technical aspect, there was all of the, you know, check marks along the way, mm-hmm. like the snatch, the snaggle, the banger, and then the final pitch that was like 25 to 35% grade, just straight up through the, you know, marbly big baby mm-hmm. head type rocks. So I had to go practice all those sections and then kind of just, okay, this is what I can expect when the day comes. I need to be ready for that. There was just a lot of components to it that we had to account for. I mean, even to my diet, like what was I eating? How often did I need to eat? What did my body accept at 6, 7, 8 hours into a ride?
Right.
And luckily I had my good friend Greg helping me with that.
I was going to say, he's the one that was like tracking your calories and all that too, right?
Yep. So he kind of helped me with like the, you know, you need to go do zone 2 for 6 hours this week. You need to go ride that gravel bike. And I was like, oh gosh, I'll do that if that's what's necessary. And I just kind of said, all right, I trust you, Greg. All right, I trust everybody here, the camera crew, everybody, like Kim Cross with the story. And I'm just like, all right, let's do this thing.
Oh, yeah.
I put in all the work for the technical, and then it was time to execute. And put the mental skills to the test. And then thank the good Lord, I made it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, all right, crap. Now we got to go make a movie, you know? So then I reached out to Dr. Manning and I was like, all right, hey boss, can I come interview you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. So I went out to Milwaukee and interviewed him. And then we started intertwining the mental strength message with the climb and having to go and tell my story about my cousin and about my inadequacies as a kid with my school, and trying to make this a meaningful story was a whole nother project. But I'm just, super grateful it came together and it's having such a good impact in the world.
Yeah. And too, like I said, like, I think you guys did an epic job of having Dr. Manning's like pieces in there, and like it correlates with like that part of the trail, like in a way. And then you obviously being vulnerable, talking about it was your cousin, correct, that took his life, and like was that during COVID? Is that when that happened? Or
so that was in 2016. That was right when I graduated with my undergrad, and he was going through some tough stuff personally, and then when he did that, I was just like, kind of, all right, well, I'm not going to hold back from telling people if I love them or if I care about them.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit, and then I was like, oh yeah, we're losing a lot of close people in this community to suicide.
Yeah.
I've got to do something about this. And so.
Yeah. And I would, like I said, like the whole enchilada, it's not, or 8,600 feet project. Is it 8,600 foot project or feet project or just 8,600
feet? 8,600
feet. Like it does so much more than, like you just riding and like conquering the whole enchilada. Like
that was my goal.
Yeah, and you crushed it for sure.
Thanks.
So, I definitely encourage anybody listening that they need to go hit up YouTube. You can just search the whole enchilada and it pops up right there. But it's definitely more than just a mountain biking film. It'll definitely change your mindset if like you are struggling and you want to get something going or something like that. So make sure you go check that out. And there's, like I said, there's plenty of stuff on the interwebs of your whole enchilada experience. I kind of want to go back a little bit because I was listening to your 17 questions interview for Vital MTB. Do you want to share your story about your friend Mitch? Because I was dying laughing about that, and I could tell that like that's definitely a fun story for you to tell.
What one in particular? Because me and Mitch have a lot of stories.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was going to say, you do say how you could probably go on for hours. Specifically about the one with the 16-year-old that's doing the gap, and then Mitch just goes and hucks it. And I think you're like 10 at the time. He's like 8.
Oh, gosh, maybe. Yeah, so, I mean, me and Mitch. So Mitch Robilato, he's a super pro. He's won a ton of things from world stage, you know, UCI races to Crankworx overall titles and all the way to BMX freestyle competitions. Like, he's just probably the best all-around rider in my world, at least, of bike riding. And we are fortunate enough to be childhood friends. We started riding bikes when he was 7 and I was 10. So I just started riding. I just started racing. We moved from Arizona to like Ogden area in Utah.
Yep. North Salt Lake.
North Salt Lake. And that's where Mitch is from. Okay. And we just, you know, we were the two kids that were out there before practice, during practice, raced, and then we'd go back to the track after the race and keep riding. And we just instantly were like friends because we loved riding bikes. And, you know, we really jived off of each other. Like we, mm-hmm. he would do something, I would do something. And we were like, oh, cool. Like let's, you know, try to go check this other section of the track out. And then we would kind of take information from each other and work on stuff. And, the funny one that you mentioned was there was this rhythm section where there was a roller to a step up and then like three rollers. And that was, then there was like a table or something. And there just out of this corner, this roller to step up was like, you know, probably like a 14 foot gap, pretty big. And there was this pro, like this future pro kid named Derek that was really good. His dad ran the track and, he was barely making this thing. And me and Mitch were like kind of thinking maybe we could hit this gap. And I roll through and I go to hit it and I'm like, no, it just doesn't feel right. And I go around and I'm sitting at the truck, tailgate's down, and we're kind of right next to this track. And we look over and we see this little kid sprinting and just sends this gap. And he's 7 years old. And that's he crazy. Hits this thing and he like more or less makes this, right. this gap and comes over and he's all fired up. And we're like, dude, Mitch, what the heck, bro? How did you do, like, what made you think that was doable? And he was like, oh, I mean, Derek did it. And we're like, but dude, Derek is 16 years old. You're seven. And, you know, that just right there kind of showed to me like the mindset of Mitch. Like he just sees stuff done, whether it's from a pro or mm-hmm. an older person or a bigger person or whatever. And if it's remotely possible to somebody like that, then it's possible.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was kind of like one of the starting points where me and Mitch are like, dude, we need to hang out. We need to ride.
It's just like brings you back to like obviously your childhood is when it happened, but like thinking about just like the old pictures of like having the clunker or like the little cruiser bike and then like all your neighborhood friends like laying down on the street and you just hucking it off of like the little, yeah, you just hucking it off of like the little jump there.
Oh yeah. What was your record? Did you have a record of people that you jumped laying down?
We had like a bunch of neighborhood kids, but maybe like probably four or five.
Yeah.
And even like then it was like, I had my one buddy, Trevor, that I grew up with. He lived across the street from me. Like him and I were kind of like you and Mitch, like I'd make him lay down like vertically instead of like sideways and shit, and
that's hilarious.
Yeah, there were a couple of where you were just like, ooh, like that was close.
So funny. It's so funny to think back to that stuff.
Yeah
have you been you sounds like you were building ramps and in like shop class and stuff. You've just been a lifelong bike lover then.
Oh yeah, like yeah, so yeah, I mean, I would like the neighborhood stuff. I never got into like legit BMX racing or anything like that, but, just trail riding, like,
so mountain biking,
yeah,
or BMX.
Yeah, like mountain biking. And then, I kind of like my junior high, like had the BMX bike, but it wasn't any, no, it was more of transportation kind of stuff. And then like
you always love mountain biking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I actually, so I'd say like through high school or through like middle school, even like high school mountain biking. And then like when I was in the army, I actually got stationed out here when I was 20 out in, Colorado Springs.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's where I've stayed since I got out like 11 years ago now, I think. But in like 2012, 2014, I actually used to race for a local shop here And did some enduro, and then it was kind of right around like when Big Mountain Enduro Series like started like opening up more stops across across like the West. Like I think when I back then it was like Winter Park, Keystone, maybe Big Sky, and then like Las Vegas. Like it was only 3 to 5 stops or so.
Cool.
And then I think I competed in like the Keystone one. And then just like it was definitely a lot more than I could handle. So I kind of toned it back a little bit, but never stopped riding in general. But
yeah,
just kind of had gotten out of the military and then trying to figure out what I wanted to do with life. And and now I got my Canyon Spectral that I bought with my VA check that took forever to get, and just been riding ever since.
What year is it?
23.
Sick.
Yeah.
It's full time, man. Or did you get the mullet?
Say that again.
You get full 29 or the mullet?
Yep, full 29. I feel like it's still a little more bike than you need for like this kind of area. But we have a bunch of like mountain parks popping up. Like we have Virginia Canyon now up in off I-70 and stuff. And it's like perfect for that. That's a downhill enduro course with some pretty good drops and stuff. So I think it's like the perfect balance of, everyday riding plus going up there and whatnot. So that's kind of why I picked that one.
Yeah, no, that's a good bike, dude. That's a great bike. That's the one I climbed the enchilada on.
Hell yeah. I knew it. It's perfect. I knew, you know? I was thinking forward that I'm going to be on a Zoom call interviewing you and, you know, that I had to get this bike because it would be the same one that you would ride the enchilada on.
That's funny.
So...
Hey.
What else? Let's talk about Boise Mountain Bike Fest for a little bit, and then we'll get into the final hard MTB league. But yeah, let's talk about Boise.
Yeah, Boise, man. I love Boise. This is the town that I feel like I really grew up in. In 2001, I moved here, went to middle school, went to high school here. And I just owe this town a lot. I mean, I love it. I love my past teachers, my coaches. I just love the Boise kind of DNA of just being kind and being humble and being nice. Like, it's just a nice town. There's a lot of nice people. Yeah. And I just, I genuinely love this place. And so as I started getting more into biking, you know, like I'm like, well, I want to use my skills and my my network to do something special for our community. And so started talking to friends about how we could potentially maybe do a Boise Mountain Bike Festival. And they were like, dude, that sounds awesome. It's like, sweet. Well, let's maybe see what we need to do to make it happen. And I talked to the local ski resort, Bogus Basin. I talked to the city of Eagle, where Eagle Bike Park is. Talked to shops around town, and everybody was like, this sounds exciting. And so, yeah, it kind of just started with people saying, yeah, we would like that. I think that would be cool for our community. And you pair that with some fundraising for the trail organization, and you pair that with some fun group rides and advocacy efforts. And we're at, like, I think next year we're going on 6th year. So people are still liking it.
Do you guys do like a race? Like, is there a race or is it just,
we just got like
group rides?
We've got like a bunch of different group rides. Like, we got adaptive group rides, we got veteran group rides, we got lady specific group rides from bike park, riding to trail riding. We got bike demos. We got tons of coaching lessons.
Nice.
We got some fundraising aspects to it. I do think we're going to entertain like making some racing go down, just because it's like a fun thing to do. It's fun. It's fun energy for sure. So making some lighthearted racing, nothing crazy, but
some party racing.
Some party racing.
Party racing, not
hot laps type thing.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's that. And then it's coming right along for next year. So
what are the dates for next year?
I believe it's the 26th and the 27th. So it's a Friday, Saturday.
March. Is that March?
No, that's in June.
June. Oh yeah.
So right when the resort opens.
Thank you. Maybe we'll have to make it up there.
Let me know, man. I can let you guys.
Our goal is to make it to like a different mountain bike festival each year.
Fun.
And just like check them out. Like we went to Sedona Mountain Bike Festival last year. Which I think we said hi to each other, but like what were you doing? Were you doing like the, what's it called? The track stand competition or something?
I did the bunny hop. I don't think I did a track
stand. No, you didn't do the track stand. You were doing something like that. And it was just like oh, hey, dude. Yeah, that's pretty good. But they're moving to November.
I know. I'm stoked about
which
that.
Which is, yeah, it'll hopefully be less snow.
Yeah, it's been a crazy bit the last few years.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Yeah, we'll post some stuff too, see if we can get some Colorado people up there, and that'd be fun. Cool. And then what I'm super excited to talk to you about, which I'll do another intro here. So you are the founder of the Hard MTB League. I didn't come up with this one. I think this one's from your website, but it says introducing an epic mountain bike challenge in a league of its own crafted with clear vision. This event series introduces a new standard in high intensity mountain biking built to benefit athletes, sponsors, fans, and communities worldwide with $100,000 payouts.
Yeah.
And kind of like, well, I'll let you talk about it, but, I'll let you get into it and then I'll ask my questions later.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah. So right now, you know, you have biking and, you got cross country, you got downhill, you have enduro, you have slalom, you have free ride, you have slope style. But there's nothing that's really encompassing the trail bike or that electric trail bike segment that's really putting that bike, that all around technical rider on an elite competition setting. And so really this whole effort is to develop that all mountain segment. And so we've developed a track that's super digestible, from a viewer or a spectator perspective. It's got a really small footprint. You can see everything from one seat. It's got technical climbing, it's got raw slalom, it's got technical rhythm. It's got like a really technical supercrossy type rhythm trail, and then it's got downhill heavy compressions into a big 12 foot tall jump at the end. So it's got this full range of skills that the riders will have to showcase to get through this track. And
is it like one track you do all at the same time?
Good question. So it's going to be like stages, kind of like enduro.
Gotcha. You
have uphill stage, three downhill stages, and then your time will be combined.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's not going to reward any one style. It's pretty much 25% for each of the styles. And then, there's going to be two categories. We're going to have regular or analog bike category, and then we're going to have electric. We're going to have men and women. So we're going to overall have four different classes: men, women, regular, electric bike.
Oh, yeah.
We're starting this off with the finalists, collectively getting $100,000 in prize purse. And we, are starting there. Our goals and ambitions is that we can find the right sponsors, that we can find the right partners that understand this, and we can build on that year after year.
Oh yeah.
And so that's kind of the vision. To get there, here in October, the 25th, we're gonna have a celebration invitational. So what that means is this is still on that Generation One track, so others have already ridden it.
Is this, and where is this like located? In
Boise, Idaho.
In Boise, right? Okay.
And this is going to be, there's a selection committee. Riders are being selected and invited. It's more or less to kind of kick off this whole initiative. No prize money. It's just going to be a time to come together to ride this Gen 1 track and prepare for next year, where we're building an all new track. It's going to be fair, square across the board. So all the riders that want to compete will come to the qualifier in May. And then we will be taking, the top 16 total. So four in each class to the finals in October of 2026. Okay. And that's where the 100K prize purse will go out. We're going to have a broadcast, a show. So this fall, we only are going to have 500 tickets available, but we're going to have a show go live for online by Sunday night at like 7 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be sick. And then we're going to do some storytelling pieces to follow up with this fall invitational.
Nice. I think it'll be cool. Like you said, the four different stages, like it's not just like one showcase of like one, like downhill, for example. Like you're going to get that variety of like every aspect of mountain biking. I think that's going to be super sick to see.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, that's the goal. And the fact that you can watch all of it from one spot is just going to be so nice.
Cool. And then it says like locations, like you have a bunch of different ones listed. Is that like down the road in like 5 to 10 year plan or?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely want to make this thing have more than one stop. One thing we are going to be doing here really soon, and actually in the next few weeks, is we're going to be doing, hard MTB league challenges.
Okay.
And so we're going to be going out to communities around and be going and finding a section of trail and kind of inviting people to come out and jam.
Oh yeah.
And do some hard MTB league, community challenges. So
if you're making a Colorado Spring stop, I already have a trail for you.
All right, dude, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. We're going to do some stop. We got a trailer getting built out.
Oh yeah.
And we're going to be doing some touring. So
that's dope.
That is going to be fun. Yeah
we're that's going to be a good time for sure.
Just to invite like fans and other riders to come out and do these.
Yeah.
And just have as much fun as we can.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I call dibs on your Colorado stop.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, cool. That's good. I think I'm going to go down to kind of the week of Rampage and do one down in Southern Utah.
Okay.
We'll start kind of building out a list, to go on a traveling tour of we can call it the hype tour, building hype.
building the stoke.
Building the stoke
tour.
That's right, dude. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. And then that qualifier you were talking about, is that May 18th through the 23rd?
Yeah, that's going to be right there in May. I don't know the exact dates. Gotcha. If that's what it is. But yeah, that's going to be the qualifier, and riders will apply for a spot to come. And yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting. One thing I'm super excited about is, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that maybe apply and don't get in. Mm-hmm. We're going to do 2 development camps along with it. So if there's riders that are like, hey, I want to pursue this, mm-hmm. then we're going to do 2 development camps, an 18 and under and then a 19 and over.
That's cool.
Where we can let riders come ride the track. We're going to give riders mental performance coaching. We're going to give them personal fitness coaching. We're going to give them brand building coaching and kind of really, really support these riders to be their best. So they can take that, go home, train their butts off and, you know, crush it in whatever it is they want to pursue. And then continually try and come back and do a qualifier or whatever.
Yeah. That's super cool. I like is this going to be like pro only, or is it just an open qualifier?
The qualifier, I mean, I would imagine it's going to be pro only because people will apply.
Yeah.
And people that have a resume with, you know, professional races is going to help them.
Gotcha.
On the getting in. If they're not a pro rider, but we can see from their videos or from other personal relationships that they're an insane rider. Yeah, they're open to it's open for that. But my guess is a lot of the riders that will be coming to that qualifier will be fully professional riders. Maybe it won't be, but that's just my guess.
Yeah.
But
no, that makes sense. That's cool. Yeah, I definitely won't be anywhere near any of those features. I will be.
We hope you either come or you watch and experience the stoke of this whole thing.
I mean, I'll stand there on like near the ramps with a microphone.
Yes.
That'll be the closest that I get to that kind of stuff.
Perfect.
But yeah, like watching your filmmaking background, I'm assuming is what the videos that you're putting out about the league in general, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of the process, you know. Yeah. We want to show these riders working through the process and how that can inspire everyday people.
Oh yeah. And like, I mean, all your video work is top notch. Like you've already like the Instagram page already for the MTB league is sick. So, yeah. And what is the Instagram? Is it Hard MTB League? Right.
Hard MTB League. Yep. Yeah. Cool. I think that's what.
So make sure you go check that out. We're definitely going to try to make something happen. Maybe in October, cause it's my birthday week next year. We can make another trip up there. and then yeah, definitely that I'm excited for the tour that you're talking about.
Dude,
I think it'll be.
That's where RockShox is too. So maybe there could be.
Yeah, double. I was gonna say you can stop by SRAM. SRAM, whatever, however you want to pronounce it.
I say SRAM.
Yeah, I've heard like, we kind of like, we have a cross country race, I would say, here. That's like the extent of like Colorado mountain bike races. And we like stopped by one of the days last year and I heard different people pronouncing it different ways. And then I said SRAM and then got into a debate with a dude in the beer garden. And I was just like, I mean, we all know what we're talking about. I was like, I have a Fox Shock, so I can't really say anything, but it's all good.
That's awesome.
Cool. I think that's what, I wanted to read you my other ChatGPT intros that are pretty good. So I got 3 of them. And the first one, strap in, clip in, or just hang on. Today's guest pedaled up the whole enchilada while the rest of us were still eating breakfast burritos. The one, the only, Braden Bringhurst.
That's hilarious.
I like the eating breakfast burrito still, because that's where I would have been.
It's in line with the whole enchilada.
Number two, coming in hotter than a double black descent, the man who turned one of the gnarliest downhill trails into an uphill challenge, the founder of Hard MTV League, Braden Bringhurst, is on the mic.
That's funny.
Yeah, I could like just sit there and do chat with GBT all day, because some of them are, you're just like, no, and then others, like, I literally will sit in my office and just laugh. And then number three, he's the uphill madman, the downhill dreamer, and the reason you're thinking what a mountain bike can do, ladies and gents, Braden Bringhurst. Yeah, I thought those were pretty funny. You'd get a kick out of those, maybe. But
they're all super nice, man. I'm sure there's some not so nice ones, but
ChatGPT didn't think so we're good. Cool. Anything else that you want to touch on, or?
I think, just love seeing people, you know, get out, enjoy the bike, go riding for themselves. And I love seeing what you're doing, the fact you're doing this podcast, the fact that you're, you know, still, crushing it in your career, making a difference in the community, and still keeping the passion of riding alive.
Oh yeah.
I appreciate that. Super sick. And so, yeah, I would just, yeah, encourage anybody that's listening to, you know, keep your passions alive, whether it's biking or hunting or fishing, whatever. I think there's something really special about having something you're passionate about that's, you know, something you can turn to and find a lot about yourself through, and kind of helps you get through all the business and family and, you know, daily ups and downs of life. So way to keep the stoke alive.
Way to keep it alive, bro. Gotta keep stewarding the stoke for sure. Yeah, well, like I said, like, I appreciate you very much taking the time to come out and chat with me. Well, I guess not come out, get on and chat with me.
Glad we could do it.
Heck yeah. So make sure you follow Braden on his social media, Hard MTB League. Go on YouTube and spend hours just seeing how sick of a rider he is. And make sure you watch the whole enchilada, and like, or 8,600 feet. And like we said, it's not just a mountain biking video. And you subscribe to the Stewards of Stoke podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Follow us on social media. Hopefully be doing some giveaways here soon. And yeah, continue to steward the stoke, as Braden said. So thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you soon.
Cheers. See you, everybody.